There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along on this Monday. Another hour of live local talk. Phone and text line 343-0106. A lot of text here about our conversation with Representative Pringle. If you want to share that podcast, just go grab it from the website, or you could go to the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app. Just go to iTunes if you're an Apple user, or if you're on the Android system, go to Google Play and just type in FMTALK 1065. No point between the 6 and 5. You'll see the app. You'll see our logo. Download that, baby. Put it on your phone. You're going to love it. We'll talk more about the features coming up. Also, speaking of that, so there's a text said, what about the bear that got hit Cottage Hill between Hillcrest and Cody last week? Not much more. I did talk with the people from the state about that. They may come on with me later this week. But Tracy Wood, who's the over all the bear program for the state of Alabama, she was on with me a couple weeks ago. We talked an hour about the bears and the movement in the spring and all that. You can go back and check that podcast out as well through our website or through the app, even better, and listen to that. All right, in the studio, and it's good. I talked to this man so many times last year over the phone as he was going helter-skelter with Baldwin EMC, Vice President with Baldwin EMC, Mark Ingram, our guest in studio. Good to see you.
Well, it's good to be seen. It's nice to be out.
Yeah, last year I was on the phone calling. You were so gracious to give us updates because so many of our listeners, were affected by Sally.
Right.
You know, so many. And you had constant updates for as the damage was happening and as y'all were recovering areas and stuff like that. And I appreciate that more than you know.
I was glad to do it because, you know, we want to get the word out. People want to know what's our restoration efforts during a storm and what better way to get it out on the station here. So thank you for allowing us to do that, Sean.
Well, hopefully we don't have a reason to, but when we do next time, I can't wait to talk with you more about it. We're going to get back into that, but I do want to make sure we get time for the project you'll have coming up right now with the wharf. This is the second annual this is to raise supplies, right? It's Supplies for Success Drive?
It is. It's our second annual Supplies for Success Drive. And actually, the drive started today, June 14th, and it will run through July the 16th.
Okay.
And we have partnered again with the Wharf, and they have a welcome center, as you know, down at the wharf. So that's the location that you can drop off the new school supplies at the wharf.
Okay, so what are y'all looking for? School supplies these days. Listen, I got a couple of kids in my house. School supplies may have changed since you and I were getting them.
Well, I think they have changed quite a bit, Sean, to tell you the truth with that. I didn't realize we had to have this many school supplies.
Right. We just had like a pencil.
Yeah.
And some shoes.
Pencil, shoes, scissors, and glue. Yes. And we were set.
That's
you know,
right.
They
That's
provided
right.
everything else. But yeah, there's a wide list here. Just to give you an idea of some things, Kinder mats, glue sticks, of course, crayons, color pencils, mechanical pencils, cap erasers, Expo markers, wide rule filler paper, college rule filler paper, headphones.
We did not have headphones.
We didn't have headphones.
We didn't have headphones. No,
we didn't have headphones. Calculators. So there's a whole list of things, and they can find that list on our website at baldwinemc.com. But it's a great opportunity for us to show our commitment to the community and have this Supplies for Success drive. All of the supplies, you know, that we collect through our offices in Summerdale, Bay Minette, and also in Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, along with the wharf, will be donated to Catholic Social Services.
Great program.
Yeah, it is a great program. They do so much in the community. And we partner with them on a lot of different programs throughout the year. But they have a program called Project Reach that they started several years ago. And it's a program to help those students that need supplies because we're coming out of COVID, you know, unemployment situation. So there's definitely a need for the community to come together and provide these supplies to the students that need it.
So they know how to make a match between the supplies that we drop off and the families that need them.
They do. You can call Catholic Social Services and get on their list for the distribution of the school supplies through Project Reach. So they have a list of parents that have called and that need supplies for the coming school year. It's kind of interesting, you know, we just got out of school.
Yes.
But we're already talking about
it. August school starts and time moves quickly.
It does move so quickly. I remember, what was it, September, Labor Day?
Yes,
it's when we would start, but now they start so early.
August 14th. Well, I don't have the thing in front of me, but I think like the 14th or something.
I think you're right. Yeah, 12th, 14th. So it's early, it seems like to me.
Yeah, and believe it, yeah, we're talking about like 2 months' time.
Yes.
Basically, before they're back in. So people can just, is it pretty obvious when they walk in? They see the list of items, they walk in the office and
yes, at our office locations.
Or at the wharf, right?
Or at the wharf.
There's something that says, hey, this is Baldwin EMC.
There's a schools for supplies bin.
Okay.
And you just put your school supplies in there.
Good deal.
And then we'll collect them, you know, each week and bring them back at the office. And then we'll take them down to Catholic Social Services. And then they will begin to organize it there.
Okay.
And then they will distribute it later in the year.
Good deal. Let's talk about it, Baldwin EMC. Here we are in another hurricane season.
What?
Yeah.
What?
a thing. You know, that time of year.
Yeah, it is. That.
And you know, last year, Sally, I mean, my gosh, what the impact was. We're just talking about that. What did y'all learn anything from Sally you're applying this year? Anything in your discussions going into this new hurricane season?
Sean, that's a very good question. You know, while we're still recovering from Hurricane Sally and Zeta, you know, we have to go ahead and prepare for the next season. And we immediately did that. Following Hurricane Sally and Zeta, after we had restored power to all of our members, we had several meetings at our offices, and we brought in all the personnel that are associated with our natural disaster plan. And we said, okay, what worked during Sally and Zeta? What didn't work? What were some things that we learned, you know, about these hurricanes so that we can be better prepared next season? So really for almost 8 to 12 months now, we've been redefining our natural disaster plan.
Oh, wow.
Yes. A lot goes into it because
it's a pretty big effort with y'all have got, you know, how many customers? How big of a
footprint? Well, we serve around 84,000 meters now in Baldwin County.
Wow.
So that's a lot of meters to serve. And as far as members, we're probably around 65,000 members.
But a lot of people.
It is. It's a lot of people. And a lot of people don't understand, you know, during a hurricane, all hands are on deck.
Okay.
So it's an all call.
Everybody works.
Every employee.
Yeah. Hey, y'all hear that here at FM Talk? See, we're not the only ones. Yes.
Yeah, we're out. We're out and about. You know, I talk to you early in the morning sometimes.
Yes, we work. Yep.
With Dan Dalton and yourself. So every employee at Baldwin EMC has a role. And it may be that they're handling food distribution to our crews. It may be that they're handling laundry, or it's handling check-in, or handling public relations, or accounting, you know, because so many things are needing to be done. But every single employee, all 200 employees, have a specific role in our natural disaster plan.
It's good to know. Going into, hopefully we don't have to bring that to bear this year.
I hope we don't either, but if we do,
y'all are ready?
We're ready. We are ready. We learned a lot from Sally and Zeta, and that was good because, what was it, 16 years almost since we had a major hurricane hit us? You know, we asked several times, you know, are we ready for hurricane season? Are we ready? Because it had been so long since we had one. But we practice that natural disaster plan every single year. And we have a team that comes together and they say, okay, here's our scenario. Category 3, category 4,
y'all
whatever.
Y'all run them that way?
We run through it.
Okay.
We run through it and everybody at that table talks about what their responsibility is and when things will get done.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, that you have, like we talked about Sally, it was a double whammy because you didn't have the wind, but we had the rain. That
torrential
soaked,
rain.
That soaked stuff and made trees come over that might not have come over if it was a drier hurricane.
That's exactly right. You think about Ivan, it moved in and moved out pretty quick.
Right.
But you take a look at Sally. Gosh, it set on us for so many hours, and the wind just kept blowing and churning and everything, and that uprooted, you know, we were talking earlier, uprooted almost 5,000 trees.
Y'all think about that. Just picture a tree and just picture 5,000 of those jokers down.
Yeah. Just tearing up our distribution network throughout Baldwin County.
Yeah, I think about that, Mark, and it like makes me get sweaty palms because I think about the infrastructure I have to protect with this radio station. It's two places.
Sure.
Two places. But that's worrisome. During storms, I got a transmitter facility and I got a main studio facility. Mm-hmm. Y'all's infrastructure is spread out over how many miles?
Well, you know, our county is 100 miles long.
I mean, so
we serve from the coast all the way into Monroe County. We have about 1,000 meters, I believe it is, in Monroe County that we serve.
Talking about hanging out in the wind there. I mean, it's like a...
It was a lot. You know, we had over 1,300, close to 1,400 poles broken or snapped, cross arms snapped. So it was a tremendous task, you know, to restore power, but our guys,
you got it done.
We've got a good crew because we got around 1,500 other line workers throughout the nation to come in. And, you know, we were set up at OWA for our storm site. And within 9 days, we had total restoration of 78,000 meters.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, just your crew and working on it and the advancements made. Because I remember just like, as a kid, the aftermath of Frederick, it was in kids' time, but it seemed like it took, over here from Alabama Power, months, it seemed like. It was like forever.
Well, there's been so many improvements made, you know, in reliability and infrastructure and the way that you can switch load from one circuit to another substation.
Right.
So a lot of things have changed since then, so we're able to restore power sooner. Now than we were then, but you know, sometimes it's not soon enough because we know everybody is relying on their power and they want power to be on. But the one thing that we have to make sure that we do after a storm like Sally is that the community, the infrastructure, is depending on us to restore that power. So you got to have power before you can do so many things.
It's a lot of pressure. All right. Remind folks, too, they want to drop off school supplies. Where do they go, first of all, to see the list of supplies?
First, go to BaldwinEMC.com.
Okay.
And it's right there on our front page. Click on that, and you can scroll down, and you'll see the list of supplies that we have and need. And then if you want to donate supplies, go to four locations. Go to Summerdale at our headquarters, go to Bay Minette at our office, or our office in Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, or the Wharf at the Welcome Center.
Very good. Good to see you in person.
Good to see you, Sean.
Mark Ingram, VP at Baldwin EMC, our guest. Coming right back. More of Midday Mobile straight ahead.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and appreciate those downloaded the app and texting us probably from the app about it. Thank you. Remember, check your Google Play if you're an Android user, or the iTunes Store if you're an Apple user. It's the FM Talk 106.5 app. Make sure to put it in that way. Just FMTALK, the number 1, the number 0, the number 6, the number 5, and just look for that app. No point between the 6 and 5. I don't know. It messes up iTunes and Google Play. Just leave the decimal point out, leave the period out, and just FM Talk 1065, and you'll find the app. All right, it's like a day. This is a day focused on me. I had my member of the state legislature of the House in the first hour, and look up my city councilman in studio as well. Joel Days, good to see you.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Sean.
Lots to talk about here, number one, with what's going on now and what comes up in August with the election. So I want to get to District 5 first, and then we'll break it out to the bigger city. And I've asked this of people that are running, you know, for the first time for these jobs, since, you know, whether it's 2 or 6 or 4, what district, your triage list for District 5. What is, like, as you look, is like the most important infrastructure, the most important, like, as you look at the projects, what do you, how do you list them?
Well, Sean, I think what you have to start with is that 8 years ago we had a huge amount, $250, $300 million of deferred maintenance on our infrastructure. And there's a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the intervening 8 years, we've spent a lot of money. Even just in District 5, we've spent $15 million on roads, drainage, parks,
wow,
sidewalks. But there's more work to be done.
Sure.
There's a lot more work to be done. You know, the city a couple of years ago, just to take roads, the city a couple of years ago did a survey, had a third-party outfit come in, and they surveyed every single road in the city. And they had these machines, this, I guess the best way to call it is an X-ray that looks not only at the surface but the subsurface, and gave each street a grade.
Oh,
okay. From 1 to 5, 1 being really, really good and 5 being really, really bad. And so we have this, and we have it broken down by district. And so as we go forward, it's important to keep spending on infrastructure. And just to take, again, roads, what I'll be doing is I'll be looking at that report and attacking the ones that are grade 5 first.
Right. That's good to know that there's a way to triage them then.
Yeah.
Because this, you know, one of the government that is closest to us is the most important, I always argue. And out of that, at a city council level, how many times is it a call about a road or a pothole?
There's a lot of calls. There's a lot of calls. And I'll tell you, in this city, you get a lot of calls about drainage, too.
Yes. Well, that was next. Yeah.
You know, a city that gets 60-plus inches of rain a year, you're going to have drainage, and is 300 years old, you're going to have drainage problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the last eight years, we spent $4 million on drainage, you know, trying to get it so the ditches aren't caving in and the mm-hmm. water drains properly. But these drainage projects are really expensive and really intrusive on the residents that back up to the ditches and mm-hmm. the creeks and everything. I've spent, as I say, $4 million. Sean, we've hardly really touched what really needs to be done.
Wow. And one thing I would, and I caution people to pay attention to projects like that, because road resurfacing or widening or something, we get delayed for a little while, but then we see it and we're like, good for our member of the city council, wherever you live, you know, like, this is great. A drainage project, other than the people directly affected, like you said, often goes unnoticed by all of us, you know? I mean, it's...
Yeah, absolutely. The people...
You're not getting any attaboys for that one.
Right. Well... There was one project, drainage project, occasionally do. There was, when I was going door to door in 2013 when I first ran, and I was up on Cottage Hill Road up near where Demetropolis comes in. No, it was up near where University comes in. And these folks, there were about 10 or 12 houses up there in that neighborhood that every time we got one of these big gully washers, their houses would flood. And they said, you know, we've been trying to get the city to do something about this for a long time. And finally, we were able to do it. We were able to, but to do it was expensive. You had to shut down Cottage Hill Road. It's terribly difficult.
We're coming right back. More with Mobile City Councilman Joel Daves. And we'll talk more about District 5 and the city at large and his campaign. That's, by the way, reminder, coming up in August, we're going back to the polls.
listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, guest in studio, District 5, Joel Day's City of Mobile City Council. And I want to get into campaign. I want to get into a couple other citywide issues, but I can't let this go. During the news break, Councilman Days and I were talking about just this thing I'm obsessed with, which shows another reason I'm weird, is infrastructure under the ground and drainage. You said that in the dig up there, the Florida Street dig up there, that they found a 36-inch stormwater drain, right?
Right.
That's significant. That's a big drain.
Yeah. So everyone, you know, we worked on Florida Street for a long time.
It was a long time, yes.
And everybody got kind of upset, which they should have, about how long it took to do the part from Dauphin Street to Old Shell Road.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you don't know what you have down there until you dig it up. And
y'all wait.
And so they dug it up, and what they found was they had this big 36-inch stormwater drain, or 24, anyway, a big stormwater
right.
drain, and running laterally through it was a sewer pipe.
Like a hole drilled through the stormwater drain, and here comes another pipe.
It goes out the other side. So now what do you do? Now you got to fix that before you go forward.
So that pipe was stopping sticks and leaves
right,
and all that
right,
stuff
right.
in there, and had a clog in it.
So it's an unforeseen problem, and this was just one. So it's an unforeseen problem, and then you got to go and re-engineer it and figure out how you're going to fix that problem.
I just wondered, you know, I said to you earlier, I said that was a Friday project. Foreman said, you know, we all want to get out of here. Y'all just drill a hole through that. We'll run the pipe through it. Unbelievable. And you deal with this. You did make a good point. While you have issues in District 5, what happens going down the hill to the east?
Yeah, you have to if you're going to fix drainage problems, you have to fix them. You have to start fixing them at the low end.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no sense having a 36-inch stormwater pipe at the high end if you got a 12-inch pipe at the low end.
Right. Right, there's nowhere for it to go. Let's talk about some citywide issues here. One that got a lot of discussion, we've talked about it so many times on the show, is annexation, or at least the ability for people outside the city to have the right of referendum on annexing into the city.
Right. That issue came up a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
The real issue, Sean, is the economics of it. We're spending millions and millions of dollars out there in the police jurisdiction to provide police and fire services to people who are not residents of the city of Mobile and don't pay the same taxes you
pay
and
half. They pay half.
They pay half the sales tax, right, in the city of Mobile. So to bring them in would generate net additional revenue. There'd be more expense, but there would be more revenue. So the net additional revenue would be in the first year $1.5 million and $2.2 million in every year thereafter. Plus, if we were able to get over this 200,000 residents, we move into another category and we become eligible for grants that might have put us in line for $5 to $10 million in grants.
So even if it was a break-even, this is a question, you know, I listened to y'all discuss this a year and a half ago. Even if it was a break-even, which it's not, you said it's cash flow positive for
right.
the city, but even if it's a break-even, the benefit is there because of the size of the city and what it means.
Other than
me being obsessed with the size of my hometown, you know.
Right. you go over 200,000, now you're eligible for grants you're not eligible for when you're less than 200,000. But again, one of the major drivers, as far as I was concerned, was the equity issue of if we're gonna provide police and fire protection, which is a very expensive service to provide.
Yes.
Then we ought to be providing it to citizens who are paying the same taxes that we're paying. Now, after that failed, I offered, and you'll remember this, I offered an ordinance that would have brought back police and fire out of the police jurisdiction
mm-hmm.
over a phased period of time.
It wouldn't, yeah,
so
wouldn't.
The people affected would be able to make alternate arrangements. And I was willing to, you know, I was willing to work on that. That failed also.
Drove a lot of phone calls around here.
So the folks that opposed this opposed it on the basis of we want to take care of our own citizens first. Well, okay, if we had done it, we'd have more revenue to take care of our own citizens first. And secondly, if we're not going to do the annexation, then why not bring back the police and firefighters into the city limits so we can provide better protection to our own citizens?
Versus this kind of purgatory situation that we're in now.
Right.
And once again, for people to understand, what y'all were voting on was not whether you would annex in or not. It's whether the people would have the right to vote.
Exactly right. The annexation vote was just whether we're going to give them the right to vote on coming in.
So does that get readdressed? Does this come back up? After August, does this come back up?
You know, we'll have to. I certainly hope it will. I certainly hope it will. You know, that's going to depend on who's the mayor and the composition of the city council. But I certainly, I don't think we should give up. I think it's an important, a critically important issue for the city. And I think we should continue to try to push it forward.
Right. I want to get some train talk into the mix. And listen, I've got to go to you on this because I sit in conversations with John Sharp from AL.com, Dale Leash from Lanyap, myself, the people who do this every day. And I don't know what the heck is going on. I mean, it's, you know, to hear Amtrak say, well, they're going to go ahead and do something, even though they don't have the go-ahead municipal level or state level. What the heck is going on?
Well, here's what's going on. When this came up, we were asked by the Southern Rail Commission, Amtrak, to put up $3 million in the first 3 years. And then we would take it over, and our subsidy would be about $2 million. The city's subsidy would be about $2 million.
If needed, right? Yeah. It would be.
And the city council voted on, and this was negotiated out, that there were a couple of conditions to our agreeing to do that. One condition was that a freight rail study be conducted by the carriers and Amtrak in order to determine what, if any, impact there would be on the operations of the Port of Mobile, and if there were, if there was an impact, how that could be mitigated. You got to understand, the Port of Mobile is responsible directly or indirectly for 50,000 votes
in
this area.
Yes.
So it is the single largest economic driver of our economy. And people think, well, the only people it affects are the people that work down there on the river. Uh-uh. If you own a barber shop, if you own a small restaurant, if you own any kind of business at all, you're dependent on the port because 50,000 jobs are dependent on
right.
the port. So anyway, so that was one of the conditions. The other condition was that someone else pay for the train station because we don't have a train station.
Right.
And the Southern Rail Commission said they would pay for the train station. Well, so neither one of those two conditions have been met. And then the Amtrak unilaterally decides they're not going to do the freight rail study.
Even though they said they would.
Even though they said they would.
Right. I'm just making sure I'm following this here. This is how it seemed to be on the outside.
Even though they said they would, now they say they don't. And no one's come forward with the money for the train station. And I don't see any reason to go forward with it. And let me.
But they said they are. Amtrak says, well, but we. Am I wrong?
They say they're going to do it. It is.
What
right
am I
now,
missing?
Right now, it's in a administrative. The issue has been put before an administrative body that is determining whether or not it can be mandated. And the SRC has sent in statements, and the Amtrak has sent in statements, and I sent in a statement. Importantly, there are a number of other ports between us and New Orleans that object to going forward with it without a freight rail study. Our port is
not just Mobile.
Not just Mobile. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. But I think it's bad policy to cram this thing down our throats without complying with the things they agreed they were going to comply with.
They have done neither of those, even though they still say they're going to do it and they would expect money from the city.
Right. Right. And again, they say they're going to bring it back in January, right? Well, where are they going to pick up the passengers?
I'm asking you, I have no idea.
So the only way they can, quote, restore, end quote, service is if they pick up passengers at the same place they used to pick up passengers. Remember, we talked about moving the train station to Brooklyn. Well, they can't do that. That's new service. The only way they can restore it is if they pick up passengers and debark passengers where they did before, which is an empty lot at the foot of Government Street.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they bring it back. Is everyone going to stand there by the side of the railroad tracks waiting for the train to come?
So January is their date for
that. That's what they said.
Well, we'll watch it.
Have no commitment from the city
to
provide any money. There's no train station. I don't know. Even if this administrative tribunal rules in their favor, I don't know how they're going to do it.
I don't know either. When my councilman doesn't, I sure as heck don't. All right, let's talk about this. People want to get more information about your campaign. They want to get with you. How do they do that?
Well, my campaign address is P.O. Box 8445, Mobile, Alabama 36689. They can call me at 251-776-0883. Looking forward to any support I can get.
Well, I see those signs out there. If they want to, how does somebody get a sign?
Call me or email me.
All right, and you can get it delivered to them.
Absolutely.
All right, Councilman Joel Davis, thanks for your time.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
All right, get you back here soon, and we'll talk about things other than trains as well when we do it. All right, coming right back, Skylar Martin from the Southern Cancer Center joins me right here on the Day Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. And guest in studio, Skylar Martin with Southern Cancer Center. And first of all, good to see you. Welcome in.
Thank you.
And we're talking genetic testing. And I know we've talked about this before with Dr. Mishap, but this is fascinating to me. What y'all are doing right here at home at Southern Cancer Center with genetic testing, how does that affect us as possible patients and kind of the science behind this?
So with genetic testing, we're really working towards getting patients into clinic sooner and identifying those patients who are at high risk for developing cancer, hopefully alleviating the diagnosis. Not only that, but if they are diagnosed, being able to catch it sooner and be able to hopefully help those patients survive.
So who is somebody, as we're talking today, Skylar, who is somebody who is somebody who might need to think about genetic testing? I mean, can you describe that person, or is it all kind of people?
It's all kind of people, but anybody with a strong family history of cancer is a good candidate for genetic testing.
We'll make it personal. You're describing me, so it's in my family. I just come in and say, I want to get genetic testing, or do I have to come in and say, it's testing for this kind of cancer, that kind of cancer, or is it just overall?
What you would do is come into the clinic and say that you had a family history, you were interested in the process, and then you and I would sit down and talk about what testing would be appropriate for you based on your personal and family history.
When you do that testing and get the report back, does it say, all right, you have, let's say it does say you have a proclivity for cancer here. Is it going to say that means for sure you will develop that cancer, or is it you're at a higher risk level? Could you show a marker and not ever develop cancer?
That's a really good question, because I think that a lot of that is the fear of the unknown.
Uh-huh.
People want to know, but they don't want to know. And when you come in, it's not going to say, yes, absolutely, you're going to develop this kind of cancer down the road. It's just going to say your likelihood of developing it. And then once we get those numbers back, we can make a plan on what to do to try to prevent that.
Okay. Then that's, the next part. And we hear so many times, too, with the way the science is that, thank goodness with the technology, they caught that cancer early. Yeah, and I'm not even saying specific. I don't know the specific cancers, but you just hear people talking around the water cooler. How important is that, catching it early? I know that's not a medical term, but I mean,
It is a medical term. I mean, we call them early stage cancers.
Okay.
And so when we catch it early, we can help, obviously help people live longer, but we can also avoid chemotherapy in certain instances.
Okay. People worry about two things. Obviously, the cancer itself, but the treatment. People watch treatments over time and go, I fear that.
Absolutely. And what we can do in those situations, we have different tests that we can do to help determine if you would benefit from chemotherapy, if that's something that would provide you a long-term, better outcome. And we've got those options too for patients.
Can I go nerd here for a second on the genetic testing? Like this over the last, what, two decades, three decades? I mean, I think what unlocking the genome was 20 years ago or was it? Yeah, something like that. And you can't go a month without looking like at science.com or something like that, that we're making huge leaps in what can be done with this information.
It's changed so much even in the past 8 years that I've been with Southern Cancer Center. And the testing has, it's become more accurate. And then it's also become easier to access over the years. With the testing, they have a 99% accuracy with the results. And
99%?
They actually say 99.99%.
Holy mackerel. Mm-hmm. And 20 years ago, this didn't exist.
Right.
You know, there's some things that like, well, this medicine's been around since the 1940s, but we've worked harder and harder and gotten it dialed in. This didn't exist 20 years ago.
It didn't exist. And unfortunately, access to it wasn't great until the past 5 years or so.
The idea that you could go in, get this genetic testing, go to Southern Cancer Center and have this idea of what you might face, not for sure, but what you might face, that's going to get somebody, okay, like me, to be more regular with getting screenings and checkups and that. And then I got to think for ladies and breast cancer, it's very important too. You have that family history. Okay. They know heredity, but now we can get a lot more specific on who might have a risk of breast cancer and get them in for checkups.
Oh, absolutely. And the breast cancer world is changing so much. You're actually able to do different types of screenings, not just mammograms, but you can offer patients MRIs, you can offer them chemo prevention medications, and even surgical options.
Because this is something that if you get, I'm asking here, if you get ahead of on breast cancer, if you find it in its, just when it's starting, it's less invasive. Is that maybe the right word? Or
Yep, less invasive, and you can avoid chemotherapy in most of those patients.
That used to be like, you had breast cancer, you're going to get chemotherapy. I mean, it was like not a question, right? It used to be that, you get chemo, you get breast cancer.
Absolutely. I had that conversation with a patient yesterday because she wanted to know why she's not getting chemo. And
oh, wow. It's flipped around. Yes. It's like, are we doing this right? Because I'm getting chemo.
And it was rewarding to be able to tell her that in her situation, we were confident that she wouldn't get benefit out of chemotherapy. So she didn't need it.
That's got to be great to bring that news to people.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, not all the time is our job that rewarding that sense. And so we like to be able to tell patients that.
That is fantastic. Okay. So for families that have this history of cancer, if you don't know, that's another thing. Some people might not know their family history. You know, I got the country folks in my life that in the family Bible just says they died. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, well, why'd Uncle so-and-so die? They died. I don't know. Suppose somebody could come in and get this historical, you know, study on them, the genetics, even if they have no idea if the heredity is for cancer or not.
Yeah, we talked through all of that, and patients who don't know what their family history necessarily is, they benefit from the testing as well because they don't know, oh, I have colon cancer, I need to have these screenings, I have breast cancer, I need to have these screenings. So this can help us pull all the pieces of the puzzle together that we didn't have initially.
This is fantastic. Skylar Martin with Southern Cancer Center. Remind folks too, if they want to get this screening, get with y'all, how do they get in touch with you? What's the best process, like call or email or what? What do we do?
You can call the clinic and say that you want to get set up for genetic counseling, and we can start the process there.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.